You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also, information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Good evening, everybody. How are you today?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Josh. We're good. How are you? Yep.
Not too bad. A couple of false starts there, but we're on the go now, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the rain. I think it's got into my brain. Yeah, the rain has got into my brain.
The rain's done. We don't know what it's like. I don't know what it's doing out there. I really don't.
And thunder and light. We've had thunder and lightning here as well. I don't know if you guys have had that.
Mm-hmm. I love watching it, but it's a bit scary, isn't it? You kind of feel, shall I go out in it? And just, but it was really nice, you know, to watch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, how is everyone? Around Robin, let's go to
around the room. Yeah, I'm getting ready to have some time off. I've got a couple of weeks off. I'm going away on Wednesday, so I'm flying off somewhere nice to Lanzarote with the family. And really, do you know when you get to a situation where you really need to down tools, you just really stop talking about HIV. You know, you have to tell ourselves that, don't we, sometimes?
Yeah.
It's hard, though. It's flipping hard. But I'm looking forward to that, because you need to empty your minds at times of perhaps things you constantly do. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm having a couple of weeks off work. So, yeah, getting ready for that.
Good.
Fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Well deserved. I kind of feel as if I always say the same thing. I've been busy. There's been lots of things going on. I kind of feel as if I'm chasing my tail as ever. But I did go to, there was the second cabaret night for the UK AIDS Memorial just last week. So I went along to that. So again, great fun, lots of people, talking about this monument or this memorial that we should have in London. So that was last week. So that was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll put the audio on, because you did a little recording,
a little clip. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Ash and Jason, who are the ones that are spearheading this campaign. So got a little bit of them.
Fabulous. And myself, what am I been up to?
Josh, what you've been up to?
I walked from the lounge to the kitchen last Thursday. And I walked back on Friday. I don't know, because I moved, thank God, hooray. I moved. Because I wasn't here last week, was I? And I'm just getting used to being in a different town and just a bit along the coast. It's nice and quiet. It's good. Work-wise is busy. That's it. No Tony at the moment. He was meant to come on today, but he's stuck in traffic, isn't he?
Yeah, because of the storms, he's been ferrying people around.
Yeah.
So hopefully he'll join us soon. But we will carry on relentless.
Carry on.
Regardless.
So what we've got on the show. So we did an amazing interview with David Frey, who's one of the organisers of, it was a Brighton, it started World AIDS Day, wasn't it? The Jubilee Library in Brighton, which was a great exhibition called More to Me Than HIV.
Yes.
And we're all in it, aren't we? Us three. We're one of the lovely people on the pictures.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's coming to London.
I know, it's so great, isn't it? It's gone to London.
So it's coming to London for a month. So that would be great. It's really good.
And that's good. That's in East London, isn't it? But I'll speak to the interview with David. I've also mentioned it for people interested in going, because it's a month-long thing. So that's later. Also, we're going to talk about monkeypox, aren't we? Which is news.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just really sort of fight, you know, just some of us are getting a bit scared about it. So we're just sort of, we're going to be making sure we talk about the proper information, you know, not to sort of scare anybody, but, you know, the up-to-date information we have, and we've got that up-to-date information, and it may not be too much, but what we'll talk about is the up-to-date information, and, you know, so people are aware.
And what else have we got? Yes, we are. Yeah, so we got some world news, have we?
Yep. Today? Yeah, I've got something from Australia this time. Okay. So, yeah. Ooh.
Gosh, cross the pond. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Something about Jill Naldo, isn't it?
She's been quite busy with Jill Naldo. She was one of the inspirations for It's a Sin, and we've had the pleasure of having an interview with her just before Christmas. She came on. It was one of our features of our World AIDS Day features last year. And she's doing something in London, and I'm going to tell everybody about that and how they can go and see her. She's doing a book signing, so I'll be talking about that, yeah.
Fabulous. So shall we get on with the show?
Yes, let's get on with the show.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
Yeah. So monkeypox is a rare viral infection mainly spread by animals. It is very rare in the UK. Let us stipulate it is very rare in the UK. All right. We're still learning about this infection, and obviously we're going to be getting updates from all the organisations as they come in. But we do have some latest information on the monkeypox virus. There has been a small number of confirmed cases of monkeypox in the UK, with the majority of those cases among gay and bisexual men. And we're going to perhaps have a discussion why they're talking about gay and bisexual men. So monkeypox is spread through close contact. It is likely being spread during sex rather than sexual transmission. And that's really important to note. So everyone has been asked to be aware of the monkeypox symptoms, which we can talk about in a moment. But it's important gay and bisexual men are alert, as it's believed to be spreading in sexual networks. So what does that sort of say to you guys already? I mean, we've got a bit more information, but what is, you know, monkey? I mean, I haven't heard of it before, but apparently we've had outbreaks before, apparently.
Yeah. Well, apparently, so just to add a bit of information to that, I found out that monkeypox was first discovered in 1958, when outbreaks of a pox-like disease occurred in monkeys that were kept for research. So it's been around for a long time, but obviously there's not been these outbreaks of it. But when you mention gay and bisexual men, for me, I don't know, do you feel the same, Josh? You know,
yeah.
It's slightly triggering, you know, of going back to a time when there was this other virus, this other disease, this other illness that was affecting gay and bisexual men, you know. So I must admit, when I first heard those words, I was like, oh my goodness. I did feel a bit anxious about it.
In the same situations as well, like in sexual networks. So it does trigger you, and I don't. For me, it's how the media talks about it.
Exactly.
So sensationalising it, focusing on those that group, and you know, there's not enough information, is there, to make such judgments. At the moment, so yeah.
But you know, do you know what, guys? I mean, we can really turn this around. Now we know, and it's documented, that gay and bisexual men are more prone to look after their sexual health and to go for checkups and to go for testing, right? More so than heterosexual people, right? And that is renowned, and that's an absolute positive. So basically, what I seem to be happening is that, you know, there seems to be more cases within that community because those communities are more active in looking after their health. So you've got the other communities that, that are probably thinking and not bothering to go for health checks and checks for anything. So obviously it's going to be a while before we probably see cases almost in the heterosexual community now, you know, and it, you know, and it just throws me back to, you know, the beginning of the AIDS epidemic where, you know, we've seen a few cases in the gay community, then everyone jumped on the bandwagon. I don't know about you. Oh, yeah, but, you know, we know that it was happening, you know, back in the 80s. We know it was happening in other communities at the time. But like you said, Josh, you know, the media have a thing of centralising things when, communities, sex, you know.
And it just heightens everyone's fear and vulnerabilities. And you just have to be so careful, don't you? We just love to we love sensationalism, and we love to, even if things are not happening, we love to know, you know, this might happen, or that could be, and it's just, it doesn't help our mental health, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. Go on. Sorry, Stephen, go on.
I think we've got to work really hard to make sure it's not labelled as another gay disease, you know, like AIDS was, you know. But again, the press has a lot to do with that labelling, you know, because obviously if they're plastering things on the front of the newspaper saying gay and bisexual men, you know, it's easy for it to happen again, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is
more homophobia. Sorry.
What worries me about what you just said, Stephen, is because we could miss other communities if certain communities are being targeted. What about the heterosexual community? There's probably more cases than that because we're not active enough. We've just spoken about that. So that really concerns me. The sensation is on certain communities. So the other communities, just sit back, let them done in the 80s. It's happening in that community. And that really does concern me, to be quite honest, you know, within my own community.
Yeah.
I think people who like the medical people who've gone through the AIDS epidemic and learned so much from it, who are still involved in those kind of things will have learned from that, and not to put people into boxes and to labels. And hopefully the people that matter, that do look into this and help people will not go back to the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Does that make sense?
Should we look at some of the symptoms? So not that get everyone checking their bodies, but it's just interesting to know. So monkeypox symptoms. So initially, symptoms of monkeypox include fever, headache, muscle aches, backache, swollen lymph nodes, chills and exhaustion. You know, I can put those down. I mean.
Yeah, difficult one, isn't it?
You know, so apparently a rash can develop often beginning on the face, then spreading to other parts of the body, including hands, pubis, genitals, penis, testicles, vulva, or frontal and anus. So that's what it says in the records. I haven't made it up.
I think in a good way about that, saying that they're in this group. I think it's just like any other like testing, isn't it? Yeah, just get yourself checked out for it, I suppose. Yeah. If you feel like you're in the vulnerable group, which I think everyone should be.
They're really very much saying this is not a sexually transmitted infection.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, like a syphilis or HIV, whatever. But it can be transmitted in those content.
Close contact, isn't it?
Close
contact.
Is there
more information needed? Yeah.
Is there any information, Sue, about, because I know there is a smallpox vaccine that they can use, but I know that they haven't started rolling that out in any way, shape, or form yet. But have you guys heard anything about any You know, like what should people do that are HIV positive if they got monkeypox?
Right. I mean, and there's another... a bit of news. You're right. What they're saying is, Stephen, there is limited evidence on monkeypox in people living with HIV, and most is based on research in countries where access to treatment is low, and overall health outcomes are worse than in the UK. So at the moment, people living with HIV should follow the same advice as the general population, should ever evidence emerge that people with suppressed immune systems are at greater risk of monkeypox or ill health from catching the virus, then updated information and advice will be made available. So I think we're still learning stuff coming.
Yeah, it's early days. Mm. Yeah, it's very early days, isn't it?
There's a question here. What should I do if I think I have monkeypox? Right, okay. They're saying, well, don't attend a clinic. Do not attend a clinic, hospital, or your GP in person unless they've arranged an appointment. Contact your GP, call 111, or your local sexual health clinic. But what they're also saying, can monkeypox be treated? So treatment for monkeypox aims to relieve symptoms. Okay, the illness is usually mild, and most people recover in 2 to 4 weeks, apparently. They will usually need to stay in a specialist hospital to ensure that the infection does not spread to other people, or so your symptoms can be treated. Most people with monkeypox, as I say, recovers within a few weeks. But I've got to be honest, what I've read of all this report is not massive information, I've got to be honest, but this is, you know, this is what we have at the moment.
Yeah, it's early days, isn't it? From it, so it's just, yeah, watch this space, and we'll keep everyone updated,
yeah,
won't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Because things that, you know, things are gonna, it may be that if you've got a suppressed immune, you know, like COVID, you know, we got the not, we didn't get our jabs early because of HIV, because we got a suppressed immune, and that can be a suppressed immune for lots of other different things, can't it? So that could be one of the cases. We don't know yet. They're still investigating it. So
yeah,
come back with my interview with David Frey from Multimedia HIV.
Come aboard, sister.
Radio Reverb.
So hello there, I'm David Frey, and I'm having a conversation with Angus Stewart, who we're very pleased to have as the photographer for More to Me Than HIV. And he took the portraits that were shown in Brighton. There was 22 of them, wasn't it, Angus?
Yeah, there was. Good afternoon.
And we have 24 now to show in London. So I think listeners might be interested in knowing a little bit more about you and your involvement in the project. And I understand this isn't your first photographic venture regarding HIV. Would you like to tell me about the previous one?
Yeah, the previous one was a long time ago. It was working with the Terence Higgins Trust on a series of photo me sort of love story things. And the idea was to sort of show that sex could still be fun and flirtatious, I think was the idea. So that was the first thing I ever did. Then progressed into being the Terence Higgins Trust Guide to Self-Sex video, which I also took part in quite a long time ago now.
Having been both sides of the lens, how do you think that has had an effect on how you engaged with the participants of More to Me Than HIV?
You really need to engage with the person the other side of the lens. That's the most important thing. I don't like having my portrait taken. I don't like particularly being the other side of the lens. So I'm not sure that having done it myself particularly helps. I think I just have to work very hard. I think the thing is, everybody has the right to be beautiful. And I think everybody is beautiful in their own way. And you have to kind of try and capture that with a camera. And I think that's quite a challenge. That's also the fun. And it's also when you review the pictures with somebody afterwards and they see themselves how you photograph them. I think that's really important.
I think you've managed to do that with this project. I think I really do. And I think there's a little bit of fun in each photograph as well, in each portrait. which really sort of helps reveal people. And that's what we're about. We're living with HIV, but we do, we have hope, we have dreams and ambitions just like anybody else. I love seeing the project grow. So it's from looking at the exhibition, it's difficult to see what the common thread is of the exhibition. But we know that everybody is living with HIV. But what else do you think connects the portrait participants?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that we've called it More to Me Than HIV. So that's the one connecting thing, in a sense, is their HIV status. But what I was really blown away by was just how lovely everybody was, that everybody who came forward was really willing to engage, was really full of ideas. I spoke to everybody before they came in for their portrait, and we talked about what specific thing we would focus on. And everybody I spoke to had some kind of idea, some kind of thought that we could play with. And it was that sense of fun and playfulness that I think was really throughout the project. Everybody had an idea. Everybody had something they wanted to bring to it, which was great.
So compared to the work that you did in the 1990s with Terence Higgins Trust, how do you think that the message of U equals U and treatment as prevention have changed the lives of people living with HIV?
I think back in the 1980s and the 1990s, we were losing people at a hell of a rate. We were going to funerals on a monthly basis. Sexuality and STIs had become just associated with death, actually, and disease. And for a lot of people, it had become associated with shame and guilt. There was a lot of fear around sex. I think what U equals U and treatment as prevention and what PrEP have given us is actually it's taken away that sense of shame from sex. Sex, once again, can be enjoyable. It can be pleasurable. It doesn't need to be rooted in fear. And I think that's a really powerful message for today, that we can go back to a very human emotion of enjoying sex with partners, without fear, without shame, without guilt.
Yeah, and breaking stigma is what this project is all about. What message do you think that people will come away with after seeing this exhibition?
I think mostly what I'd like people to walk away from the exhibition with is a sense of hope and a sense of possibility. Everybody in the portraits is smiling. Everybody is very engaged with the camera. So I really just want people to walk away thinking, well, that was fun. That was pleasant. They were nice. I want them to walk away thinking there's nothing to be frightened of. Perhaps they could walk away with a sense of the breadth of people touched by this as well, that we haven't just got white gay men. This is a community-wide infection that can impact a whole range of people. And what's important is we all recognize that, we engage with that, and we do our best to stop the spread of it.
Thank you, Angus. For people that want to know a little bit more, the exhibition actually in London this year will be raising money for three fantastic HIV charities, which are the Martin Fisher Foundation, the 4M Network, and PrEPster. We will be raising funds from selling prints of the portraits, and we will also be selling a booklet containing all of the portraits and a little bit of background to the project and some information on the three charities that we will be raising money for. The exhibition will be on display in London from the 1st to the 30th of June at the London Lighthouse Gallery and Studio, which is in London City Island, E140SZ. You can find out more information on our website, which is www.moretomethanhiv.org.uk. And if you've got any questions or want to know anything about the project, please do drop us an email at info@moretomethanhiv.org.uk. And the gallery itself has a website, which is www.londonlighthousestudio.com. We really do hope that as many of you can come along to the exhibition as possible and raise money for our fantastic charities.
That was a good interview with David, wasn't it, about Martin?
Well, yes, so excited for him that, you know, and so really pleased for them. God, you know, for what they've done in Brighton, but now it's in London, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just shows you how things can move and develop and change and people, yeah, so... Go and see it if you can,
yeah.
If you're in London.
So I was, I found this story, and obviously it kind of jumped out at me because it's titled "How Do People Feel After Disclosing Their HIV Status on Social Media?" And obviously, I disclosed my HIV status on social media, so I was kind of interested in this. And the story comes from Australia, and a recent research with a small group of white, gay, and bisexual men in Australia found that they had chosen to talk about their HIV status on social media in order to control the narrative, challenge stigma, and maintain a sense of agency, instead of seeing it as a responsibility to disclose. These men viewed it as their right to share their status. With the act of disclosing one's status is usually viewed as highly confidential and selective process. Social media platforms provide the opportunity for people living with HIV to share their status to a much larger group of people. HIV disclosure is often accompanied by feelings of anxiety, which may result in stigmatization of people living with HIV. However, many people living with HIV have described disclosure as empowering and have used it as a form of activism and a way to dismantle HIV-related stigma. Biomedical advances such as PrEP and U equals U have eased some of the fears related to infectiousness and therefore enabled easier disclosure. Now, social media opens up new possibilities for talking about having HIV, but this form of disclosure may also prevent unique risks and challenges to people living with HIV. The study was conducted about five Australian gay and bisexual men from a larger cohort of people living with HIV were interviewed about their experiences disclosing their status using Facebook and Instagram. The men were aged between 26 and 50, white, spoke English as a first language, and these participants were all university educated and had good access to healthcare. Additionally, all participants had an undetectable viral load and were confident that the disclosure of their status would not have significant impact upon their daily day-to-day life. The author cites that the lack of diversity in this subsample is one of the limitations of the study. It was something that I looked at, you know, but you know, the participants started that controlling the narrative regarding their HIV status was one of the main benefits of disclosing on social media. And that, you know, there's a number of different comments from one of the guys, Flynn, age 27, shared an instance where an individual's HIV status was shared publicly in the media without their consent. And he said, after seeing this story being talked about in the media, his life was an absolute hell throughout it. Watching other people talk about his story, watching rumors swell around it. So he asked him what his biggest regret, and his biggest regret was not controlling his own narrative. My biggest regret was losing my agency. And it was something that this study is aiming to change, you know, just to make people be more in control of their own stories. And just to close with, the personal benefits of publicly disclosing on social media were that it afforded opportunities for participants to express and rework their identities, as well as unshackle them from the burden of secrecy. The author concludes a social benefit of public disclosure was that it challenged HIV stigma by stripping HIV of being associated with delivering unpleasant, private, and difficult information. Everybody is different, and everybody yeah. has a right to disclose or not disclose, you know, however they want. But this is just a small study that's been done in Australia. So I just found it interesting, just because obviously I'd come out in that way to a lot of people. So yes.
And how was it for you? If you do you mind saying?
I was petrified. I was absolutely petrified for my career, for my friends, for, you know, so many different things. But I knew the time had come to take control of my story, you know, and not keep it as a secret. So it was scary. And but it's amazing how wonderful a lot of people were. You know, a lot of people were unbelievably amazing. You know, people that I hadn't spoken to in years that had seen it on Facebook that were just so, you know, so understanding. And I kind of think that as much as there were a few people that had issues with it, the majority of people, you know, really, really stepped up and were like, right, that's cool. That's, you know, it's just three letters, you know, it doesn't change who you are. So yeah.
It's like a relief.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And that's the same with being a positive voices speaker, isn't it, Sue? You know, we're out there telling our stories all the time, you know, and every time you tell your story, it's for us, you know, I think for us, it's just we're putting up our story out there into the world to try and make a difference.
Yeah.
Radio Reverb.
Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HRBR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online. You can also get it on podcast as well.
Fabulous. So it's a community news. Now, Stephen, you went to it's not the launch of the Memorial Esmol, it's a fundraiser, is it?
It's the fundraiser, just because they still need to raise the money for this memorial. That there hasn't been any money given besides what's been earned, but been raised by the Cabaret Night. So this is the second Cabaret Night that the UK's memorial have had. And as you said, there's a little clip from Finn, Jason and Ash from the night. And I've just done a video for it for Heart Talks for my YouTube channel. And it was great. It was fun. It was, you know, it was silly. The drag queens and, you know, just in Halfway to Heaven. And I think they said that they're going to announce a place where the memorial is going to be, because all of this has still been kept under wraps, you know, because they have to get, you know, not only do they have to get the money, they have to get the authority from the councils and all that kind of thing. So things are moving, the wheels are moving, but there's still so much work for them to do. You know, I think that there's still a lot of money that needs to be earned to make this memorial happen. So this is, as I say, this one was the second, and they're planning to do four a year for the next 2 years. So there will be more of these events happening for the UK AIDS memorial.
Should we just have a quick listen at the who's the guy who's speaking on the stage?
So the drag queen that's speaking, who I can't remember her name, but then she's talking to Jason Reed and Ash, who are the organisers of the UK AIDS Memorial.
All right, so listen.
Guys, thank you so much. Like, the AIDS Memorial is something that me and Ash have been working on for quite a long time. We're going to have events in other gay bars. We're going to continue this momentum that we've got going. We need an AIDS Memorial in London. It's so important. You know, I hate being on stage, sorry. But, you know, I recovered from AIDS in 2005. It was a devastating part of my life. And I'm here now with my friend Ash to make sure that we get this memorial in London. It's something that we're so passionate about, we really want to do, and to have these people, these artists alongside us, it's just amazing. Thank you so much.
I'd just like to update you where we are. We're going to announce the actual location this year. We've put in an application to Camden. It's fabulous, it's fantastic. So I can't wait till you all see it on World AIDS Day this year. We have a whole load of other events. We're going to do another event in summer. We're going to do Freddie Mercury's birthday party again. So I hope you'll come to that. That's early September. So please just keep on supporting us. Give us lots of money. Tell all your friends. We can do this, but we can't do it alone. We can do it all together.
Yeah, these projects are really good. And I think it deserves one to be in London, to be honest, doesn't it, really? Mm. We have one in Brighton, but yeah.
Definitely, Josh, that, you know, I've been to San Francisco, they've got one, New York's got one, you know, why does London, that question just keeps going around, everybody's asking why, but hopefully we will get it. It will be there eventually.
Good luck. So, Sue, you're going to talk about the Sussex Beacon, are you?
Something else that's coming to London. Something else that's coming to London. Now, like I said in the intro, we had our we had Jill Naldo on the show. I done an amazing interview with her for our World AIDS Day special last year. And it'd be great to perhaps try and get her on again. But Jill Naldo and friends are going to be, let me get this right, they're going to be at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, London, on the 18th of July, and she's going to be doing a book signing. And so basically, and it's the evening's called Love from the Pink Palace, because she, you know, that was very much in It's a Sin series, you know, they spoke about the Pink Palace. And I remember when I interviewed her, I said, so tell me, what was this Pink Palace? And she was saying that, you know, everything in there was pink, and she was, and apparently some of the stuff when they moved in there was already pink, so they decided to name it the Pink Palace and add to it. So so basically she's going to be chatting with friends. Now, and she hasn't said who those friends are. I'm thinking, are those friends, is there someone from it? So since she hasn't said yet, but apparently, chatting with friends, and then there's going to be a book signing. She's saying, you know, it's advertised a special evening exploring memories of loss, love, and companion. I think that would be an absolute score. £8 a ticket.
Okay.
I would get in there first, because this is going to run out. See if they've got any tickets. £8, 18th of July. What a super evening that would be. And she's an amazing woman. We heard her on the radio. But, yeah, I just thought to give her this little push. Love from the Pink Palace, it's called. Jill Naldo and friends, and I'm really sort of, who are these friends she's going to be chatting to? So that'll be, she might be leaving that to, to the
evening. Watch your space.
We will see.
It's interesting, because Jill Naldo is the one of the patrons at Sussex Beacon.
He is.
And the Sussex Beacon's launching a new major community campaign, which involves Jill Naldo. So it's called hashtag... be more Jill.
Well, haven't you about that?
You've heard about it, have you?
Yeah.
So I think you can get involved, can't you? The Sussex Beacon is inviting individual members of the community, as well as businesses locally and indeed across the UK, to be hashtag be more Jill.
Why not?
So Bill Puddicombe, who has been on the show, is the executive director of the Sussex Beacon, says, as we saw in It's a Sin, the patron Jill Naldo is a caring, compassionate campaigner. We'd like to invite others to demonstrate these admirable qualities by engaging in fun, exciting fundraising activities. In the knowledge, they'll not only help us continue our vital work, but also receive some fantastic rewards. So for full details of the campaign, which runs until spring 2023, you can check the dedicated social media, so Be More Jill on Facebook, and Twitter is Be Space More Space Jill.
Brilliant.
Or main Sussex Beacon social media site, the Sussex Beacon on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You want to set up your own fundraising page as part of the hashtag Be More Jill community campaign. If you want to do that, you can go to justgiving.com/campaign/BeMoreJill and you can start fundraising. So that's a great little thing, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Yep.
Yeah. So all back as well. Mm-hmm. Well, what a great show. We've come to an end now.
That's another one in the bag.
What can we say? Thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news, and views on living positively with the virus.